Hello? We've all suffered enough this place. Everybody's spying, Alexis said.
I see.
Nancy Dunbar hung up. She had not said, I'll take care of it. Nancy said,
A child was just run over outside the general store, hit by a car, a 6-year-old boy. He was killed.
To hell with your brats, Duncan exploded at Amy. And you, he said to Alexis. It'd be good to be rid of you. Talk about spying. But you're not taking my money just to build yourself a human stud farm in Malibu. Alexis snickered.
Ooh, how'd you guess?
Damn nympho, Duncan said.
Druggy,
Alexis said.
Where is Chester now?
Emily Radley asked.
Where did they put him?
I don't know what to say to you all, Nicholson said.
You've said it all. Chet stood up. I'm going. I'll leave the jet at Atlanta Airport if anybody cares.
We need some cooperation here, a little understanding,
Nicholson was pleading.
We've got to find a way of being fair.
Then Shauna stepped around Fletch, Corso, and Jack. She moved toward the center of the living area. Her face was as red as the setting sun.
You murderers! She screamed.
Her right fist was up.
You're all murderers. Every one of you, each one of you, murdered Chester as surely as if you'd driven a knife through his heart.
Chet looked at her curiously.
Ah, shut up, Duncan said.
Why is she yelling?
Emily Radley said.
She'll wake the dead.
To Emily Radley, Shauna said,
You did everything you could to make him miserable every minute. You never tried to understand him. You just stayed in your room taking pills, drinking by yourself, weeping, telling everybody how miserable you are.
Love? Hell. You never even took responsibility. Did you ever try to teach your children to respect their father, to understand him?
I never understood him myself, Emily said. It was too much work.
Well, it was impossible. The man would talk about anything from ants to spaceships.
Did you ever listen to him?
I did, at first. It wore me out.
Are there ants in space, do you suppose? They're everywhere else.
In a lower voice, hands on hips, Shauna said,
You've all been trying to kill Chester, each and every damned one of you.
I haven't, Amy said. I've made my life.
To Nicholson, she asked,
There's no way Vendemia is to be sold, is there?
Who'd buy it? Duncan asked. Who'd want it? Beauville answered,
I expect new corporate officers will want to move headquarters out of here. Who wants to live in this hellhole?
I do, Amy said. My children do. I expect this place to continue.
You'll be mighty lonely here, Chet said.
There's Mother. She'll stay. Where could she go?
That's what I mean, Chet said. You'll be mighty lonely.
Paying the servants comes first, Nicholson said.
Three have already resigned, Nancy Dunbar said.
They have? Downs asked.
They're waiting for their checks in the kitchen, she said. I forgot to tell you.
Nobody's writing any checks on that money, Duncan said. I have an emergency. I wrote Dad a memo.
I saw it, said Downs. For a college graduate, you don't spell worse shit.
You have nothing to say about it, Downs.
Sloppiest thing I ever saw. I can't believe Vanderbilt sells degrees. How'd you get a college degree, Duncan?
Chet said, I'm gone.
You are the most horrible people.
Shauna's eyes were closed.
None of you deserves anything. You never gave Chester a moment of peace. You never appreciated him as much as did his dog.
I appreciate him now, Amy said. He's dead.
Freedom with moolah,
Alexis stretched.
No one to tell me what to do.
He always made me feel like shit, Duncan said. No one could be as good as he was.
You made yourself feel like shit, Shauna said. You are shit, worthless shit. None of you is worth one hair of Chester's head.
Where's Archie? Emily asked. I haven't seen him around all morning.
I shot him, Duncan said. I've been looking forward to doing that. You have no idea, Shauna continued, as if talking to herself, how hard he worked, how much he did for you, tried to do for you, how much he wanted for you, how much he loved you.
Sure, sure, Alexis said. As long as we met all his demands.
If there were justice.
Eyes still closed, Shauna rocked a little on her feet.
There'd be a bus outside the front door to cart you all off to prison. You're all murderers, as sure as God made little green apples.
Fists tight at her side, head down, Shauna turned to leave the room into the foyer.
You're the one that's leaving, Shauna, old girl. Don't hesitate.
Clumsily, Duncan lifted himself off the floor into a standing position.
Chet seems to be leaving without you. Did you notice?
Justice, Shauna said.
Emily said,
We haven't decided yet where to plant Chester. Who votes for near the laundry yard? I hate gravestones where you can't help seeing them.
Getting up, Alexis said,
I'm packing my bikinis. Down payment on a Malibu house will take more than $100,000.
His finger in her face, Duncan shouted at her,
I told you, that's my money!
Oh, stick it up your nose, Duncan.
He would. Rearranging her brassiere, Amy said, that money goes to paying the servants and keeping this place running. There's grandmother to think of.
Sure, Duncan said. You're thinking of senile old grandmother. It'll be a little cheaper to put her in a nursery, don't you think, Cal? You we can put in the dairy.
To Nicholson, Duncan said, my father planned for me to run this show. I'm taking that money.
As a matter of fact, Beauville said, your father planned for you to start rehab tomorrow.
Duncan's face drained of the little pallor it had.
Like hell?
Sure, Alexis said. I'm sure he had plans for all of us. Plans and plans and plans.
Leaving the room, she said, well, he's dead, so are his plans, thank God.
Angrily, Duncan grabbed an end table and tossed it on its side. The lamp on it smashed.
Get me out of here!
Leaving, he stumbled over the table's legs. Saying nothing, Amy carried her baby out of the room. Ashen, Nicholson, and Downs remained standing as they were. Beauville was florid.
Has anything been decided? Amelie asked from behind her veil.
Not a damn thing, Nicholson said. Except that you sure have four disrespectful, self-centered brats.
That's good, Amelie said. I'm feeling tired now.
Uncertainly, she stood up and headed out of the room.
I'm doing well not to weep.
Downs asked Dunbar,
what kid got run over?
You see, Beauville said to Nicholson, the children here aren't used to there being cars on the roads. Shows you how stupid this place is. Still sitting on the couch, Nancy Dunbar spoke to Beauville.
I guess I've had it with this place myself. I wasn't sure until I just heard these people. I can't stand it anymore. I guess I'll leave today, too.
Oh, that's great, Beauville said angrily. Leave me completely in the lurch.
I don't think I care.
On high heels, Nancy Dunbar began leaving the room.
Unlike everyone else around here, I guess I've got what I want.
Corso said to Fletch, I guess this wasn't a good time to question these folks.
You'll never get them together again.
Never. I don't know what they had to say anyway.
Seems to me we heard quite a lot, Jack said.
Laboratory accident? Corso said. That gas could have been there for years. That's the easiest answer.
Are you looking for the easiest answer? Fletch asked.
Somebody had to arrange to release the gas, Jack said.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Coming for lunch? Jack asked Fletch.
Lunch? Can you do lunch?
Sandwiches, Jack said. Cheese. I'll be at your place in a few minutes. I think I saw a date on the label of that gas canister. I'll just go back to the lab and check it.
Yeah, Corso said. You do that. Let me know.
Chapter 24. As Fletch walked back from the laboratory, passing the main house, his pocket phone buzzed. Hello? On the driveway in front of the house, he stopped to listen.
Fletch?
Hi, Crystal. How are you doing this morning? Did you survive the night?
I slept.
That's good.
There must have been something in the milk.
That was the milk by itself. It's the best sedative.
I've had a breakfast of only grapefruit juice with protein powder in it, one coffee, vitamins, and an amino acid tablet called L-carnitine. Well, I had the tablet before breakfast.
That's nice.
I feel very energetic. I've done a total of 5 sit-ups already this morning and used the ankle and wrist weights a total of 20 times.
You'll sleep tonight. A small jet airplane taking off from Vendemia's airstrip roared over Fletch's head. Fletch looked up at it. The plane was marked Radley Mirror. He assumed it was Chet Radley leaving Vendemia, his family, his fiancée, leaving well before the funeral of his father.
How'd you get workmen to come to this godforsaken place on a Sunday morning?
Crystal asked.
I didn't. What workmen?
They're replacing the mirrors here in the gym with perfect mirrors. They said the order came from I.M. Fletcher. I do believe you are I.M.?
I am, Fletch said.
It did, but I didn't ask that the mirrors be delivered Sunday morning.
Well, they're here. The workmen showed up about 8 o'clock. They've been working all morning.
That's nice, Fletch said. Guess I'll be paying time and a half or double time or something.
Maybe not,
Crystal said. Maybe they know about you. Maybe they heard about what you did to that terrible place, Blythe Spirit.
Beg pardon?
Under the sound of the jet engine, Fletch had to strain to hear Crystal.
Blythe Spirit was a terrible place, Fletch.
Crystal's voice was low.
I'm glad you got me out of there. All their expensive expert help had succeeded only in making me hopeless. I'm glad you nailed those bastards.
Is Mr. Mortimer pleased? Fletch asked. I mean, with the new mirrors?
He'll never tell you. No, in fact, he's been expostulating all morning.
First at the boy's training schedule being interrupted. The next explosion from his mouth was, why doesn't that Fletcher mind his own damned business? Then when he watched Ricky seeing himself for the first time in the floor-to-ceiling, wall-to-wall perfect mirrors, he fumed. Now that damn boy won't ever want to fight anybody but himself, ever. For a boy fighting himself in a mirror, I couldn't sell a ticket to a nun, was what he said. I noticed he didn't send the mirrors back, though. I can always tell when he's pleased. Ricky is why I'm calling. Ricky, the younger boy, why would you be calling me about him?
I've discovered him.
Was he under a rock?
You know Leaves of Grass?
Whitman, of course.
No, Leaves of Grass, Grains of Sand, Seasoned Soldier, Hardened Man. Is what I'm told I am?
Guess I missed that one.
I found it in an anthology here. I just read it to him, to Ricky, because they couldn't work out in the gym this morning with your workmen here. Listen to this, I'm putting him on.
Crystal. At that moment, Fletch did not expect to be listening to a 16-year-old boxer in Montana recite poetry to him by long-distance telephone. Then Fletch heard Ricky speaking, to him, to his core.
Leaves of grass, grains of sand, seasoned soldier, hardened man, is what I'm told I am.
Through Fletch's little telephone came Ricky's magnificently timbred, modulated voice, enhanced by his distinct diction, thrilling cadence.
Drinking mud, eating grass, think of me as Saddam's ass. We're of different centuries, you and I. I'm taught to think of lips for lips, eye for eye, while you, my conqueror, are trained to think of blips. Coordinate hand, eye and brain.
Fletch stuck his index finger in his opposite ear and hunched over a little to hear better. The voice was compelling.
Muslim, Christian, and Jew, you do not know me as a man, a true believer in Saddam. See my bravery, see me bleed, even my final dying scream, silent on your computer screen.
In the voice of this 16-year-old boxer in Montana was a touch of the best. Some of the surety, authority, timbre, rhythmic sense of Olivier, Burton. To himself, Fletch mouthed, wow. Hunched over, finger in his ear, listening to Ricky over a cheap telephone speaking more than 1,000 miles away, Fletch felt something electrical go up his spine and burst in the back of his head between his ears.
The bazaar battled the arcade, and naturally the arcade won. You've had the benefits of our oil, while my mother and I had none. The problem is, and think of this, it is your every wish to drag me into a new time, a century of bliss. While the world economy thins, resources shall be averaged, it matters not who wins. Seasoned soldier, hardened man, is what I'm told I am. You, the pinball wizard mind, the Tommy deaf, dumb, and blind.
There was a pause. Then the boy's voice, not speaking into the telephone, asked,
All right, Mrs. Fayoni?
Crystal took the phone.
Fletch, did you hear?
Yes.
Are you hearing what I'm hearing?
That's some fine instrument that boy has.
Fletch, Ricky isn't a boxer, he's an actor.
Oh, Crystal. Mr. Mortimer will kill you for sure. Looking up at the house, Fletch wasn't sure what he was seeing.
I read this poem to Ricky once, just once this morning, and after a moment he began reciting it back to me, the whole thing, sounding as just you heard. Consider not only his sound, he'd memorized the whole thing only hearing it once. He still hasn't read it, isn't he marvelous?
Outstanding. Someone was tying a sheet, a white bedsheet, to a railing of one of the upper balconies. He could not see who that someone was. Sheets. Something about sheets. Bedsheets wouldn't be aired from a balcony of the main house. There was a laundry yard somewhere for that. Crystal, you can't take one of Mr. Mortimer's two remaining boxers.
Such talent can't be ignored. This boy should have his head beat in. No way. I won't have it. I think it's a very good thing you brought me here, Fletch. Who'd think of discovering a talented actor in boxing gloves and breeches in Where the Hell Am I, Wyoming?
Why does that surprise you? For a moment, nothing was happening on the balcony. The rest of the sheet did not appear. What are you going to do about it anyway, Crystal? I mean, do about him.
Work with him a little myself. I don't know much, but I know more about this than Mr. Mortimer does.
I'll read to him, make him read the texts, ask him what things mean, how he interprets them. I'll get some tapes, play them for him. This boy's never seen or heard anything other than Terminator movies. I'll get in touch with some people I know in regional theater.
A black bulk appeared, laid out along the top of the balcony railing. The bulk was as long as a person. The black bulk rolled, was rolled off the railing. As it fell, as the sheet unfurled, the body's arms extended above its head. The lower end of the sheet was knotted around the neck of the bulk, of the body, of the person. Fletch yelled, "Crystal, I'm seeing someone being hung."
"What?"
Hanging from the balcony railing by a bedsheet tied around her neck, the body was swinging. The legs and arms struggled, but not much. The black hat fell off the head and floated to the ground. No head appeared over the railing.
"Mrs. Radley!"
Fletch yelled into the phone.
"Amelie, she's being hung. Goodbye."
Fletch was already running toward the house. As he ran, he folded his pocket phone and tried without success to jam it into his pocket. He jumped up steps and across a terrace into an enormous sunroom.
"I've been stabbed."
Wearing only the bottom of a bikini, Alexis stood with Amy in the sunroom. Alexis kept whirring around in a small circle, first this way, then that, whimpering like a puppy chasing its tail. As she twisted, first she would reach her back with the fingers of one hand, then the other. Each time she took her hand from her back, she stared incredulously at the blood on her fingers. There was blood on the floor where she was rotating on bare feet. Amy was pacing around her sister, trying to examine her back.
"Stay still. You haven't been stabbed. You've been cut by a barbecue fork."
There were two wobbling parallel lines across Alexis's back, dripping blood.
"Who did this to you?"
Alexis said to Fletch,
"I was asleep by the pool. Someone whacked me on the head."
Fletch was dashing through the room. "Someone's hanging from a balcony."
"What?"
Amy started to follow Fletch. Alexis shrieked after them,
"I'm bleeding!"
"Oh, shut up," Amy yelled. "It's time somebody barbecued you, you fucking worthless piece of meat." Followed by Amy, Fletch ran up two wide staircases. On the third floor, he opened the door of a room and looked through it. There was no bedsheet tied to the railing.
"Are you crazy?"
Amy asked. Pushing by her in the doorway, Fletch said, "I think it's your mother." Amy followed him down the corridor.
"I know she's crazy."
The next door to the left was open. Fletch sprinted through the room onto the balcony. A bedsheet was tied to the railing. He looked over the balcony. Less than 4 feet below the railing hung Amelie Radley. Her black hat and veil were on the ground way below, but she still wore her long black dress and gloves. Her face was purple. Fletch supposed her neck was broken. Her body hung limp. Amy peered over the high railing like a child looking off a bridge.
"Mother?"
"Sorry." Fletch turned Amy away from the sight. There was the sound of a loud engine roaring somewhere on the estate. At first, Fletch thought it was the sound of another airplane lifting off.
"Is she dead?"
An old woman came onto the balcony from the bedroom.
"Oh, Gran."
Amy tried to put her arms around the old woman, but was shrugged off. "Are you Mrs. Houston?" Fletch asked. "Her mother?"
"Yes. Is she dead?"
"Yes." Mrs. Houston did not look over the railing.
"Once death starts happening, you see. She did not hang herself."
"No," Fletch answered, "I don't think so."
"Oh, I know so. Amelie was miserable because she did not love and did not hate and did not hope and did not despair. She was murdered. Are you going to haul her up?"
The engine noise seemed at a distance but was still deafening. Looking out over the estate, Amy said,
"Duncan." "Yes," Mrs. Houston said. "Duncan is using his racing car to chase the locals off Vindemia. At least, that's what he thinks he's doing. His eyes are glazed with some fantasy. The local boys seem to be making sport of him, which is why I came in."
Fletch asked, "Did you see your daughter hanging?" Mrs. Houston began to choke, but stopped.
"Yes. She was thrown off the railing, wasn't she?"
The little woman made a pushing gesture with her hands.
"Rolled off."
"I believe so."
"Amelie never had much fight in her. She never fought for anything she had or was given her to keep it, treasure it, not even her life."
"She'd probably taken some pills," Amy said, "sedatives."
"I'm sure," Mrs. Houston said. "You are right."
"I'd better get Lieutenant Corso." Fletch started for the door to the bedroom. For the first time, he noticed the barbecue fork on the floor of the balcony. There was blood on the tips of the tines.
"No."
Fletch stopped. He stared at the barbecue fork. "Amy, I think we had better go find your children. You both should come with me." Then came the great explosion. The sound of the roaring engine stopped instantly. Fletch whipped around. Even in the brilliant midday sunlight, the white flames rising from the exploded racing car were visible a mile away. The accident was in the middle of the road near the gatehouse. The racing car had smashed into the guardhouse. Below the flames, Fletch saw what looked like pieces of a smashed mirror piled up against the stone wall. Then great black smoke rose from the mirror fragments and began to settle over the mess. Amy said, "Oh, Duncan." Mrs. Houston sighed. She said, "And things could have been so nice for everybody." Chapter 25.
"What's that noise?" Peppy asked.
"Duncan," Jack answered. When Jack had returned to his half of the cottage, he found his door open. Peppy was sitting on the sofa bed with a beer can in hand and four empties on the floor.
"I never heard that car make so much noise before, except on the track," Peppy said.
Duncan's racing track was far from Vendemia's main buildings.
"He's riding it around the estate roads at full throttle?"
"He's chasing people in pickup trucks."
"Chasing them?"
Peppy's expression was wry.
"What's he gonna do if he catches anybody, cry in his face?"
"I'm making sandwiches for my father and me. How many do you want?"
"He'll whine at them, complain about how life isn't fair, it's all his father's fault."
"How many sandwiches do you want?" Jack repeated. "Seeing you've made yourself at home anyway."
"What kind of sandwiches?"
"Cheese, it's all I've got. How many?"
"Several."
"Running out of bread," Jack said. "This healthy bread comes in small packages."
"Jack, is your dad anything?"
"Anything like what?"
"Anything important. I mean, he was at that party last night."
"Journalist," Jack said.
"You mean he's on television?"
"No," Jack said. "He's never been on television."
"Newspaper writer?"
"Something like that."
"'Cause I need help."
"You know Chet has left Vendemia?"
"Yes."
Peppy shifted his booted feet on the floor.
"And I ain't going to prison for that son of a bitch."
Jack was dealing sliced cheese on pieces of bread on the kitchen counter.
"What do you mean?"
"Will your dad be able to help me?"
"He may be able to."
"Chet got me to do something I didn't want to do," Peppy said. "Something I didn't know I was doing."
"Sure," Jack said.
Peppy shrugged.
"You don't know what I'm talking about."
"No," Jack said, "I don't."
"You find yourself doing some ridiculous things around here."
"You've said that before."
"Have you found I tell you no lie?"
"I guess." Peppy leaned forward. Elbows on his knees, he rubbed his eyes with the balls of his hands.
"Chet told me he'd get up and go riding with his father on this particular morning. He'd be at the stables before dawn, have the horses saddled, surprise his old man, you know?"
"Yeah." Dr. Radley, sitting cross-legged in the woods, Archie the boxer dog in his lap, talking to Jack, saying he was surprised his children never went riding with him. He was surprised one morning Chet did go riding with him.
"Want a beer?" Peppy asked.
Then there was the explosion.
"Cheese!"
Jack jumped back from the counter.
"What's that?"
Instantly, the roaring sound of the engine stopped.
"Oh!" Peppy stood up. "Old Duncan just bought it."
He hitched up his jeans.
"Yes, sir, I do believe old Duncan just blew himself to hell and beyond."
He smiled at Jack.
"Probably blinded himself in that mirror car again, wouldn't you guess?"
Chapter 26. "Undisciplined people are running amok," Jack said to Fletch.
"Or a disciplined person is running amok," Fletch said to Jack.
"Are we both right?" Jack asked.
Fletch said, "Empires crumble, then people of all sorts run amok."
A servant had told Jack and Peppy when they entered the main house that she had seen Mr. Fletcher in the nursery when she happened to pass the open door. She gave them directions to the third floor, back of the building. In the nursery's anteroom, Fletch sat in an easy chair. The chair looked as if nurses and nannies, infants and small children, had lived in it, eaten in it, cuddled in it, played in it, slept in it. Fletch looked unusually comfortable in the chair. Through double doors, a uniformed nanny and Amy McDowell were tending to the children. Mrs. Houston sat in a rocking chair. Her hands were folded in her lap. Her face was turned toward the light from the windows.
"Jack," Fletch asked in a low, slow voice, "can you tell me why someone would put two large cuts crosswise on Alexis Radley's back?"
"Did someone do that?" Jack asked.
"Yes, with a barbecue fork."
"Alexis doesn't know who?"
"She was on her stomach, sunning on a pool lounge. She may have been asleep. She says someone hit her on the side of her head. When she became sensible, she found her back stinging and bleeding. At that point, she was alone in the pool area."
"You're asking me who would do that to Alexis?"
Jack glanced at Peppy, who stood with half-lidded eyes beside him.
He looked like a horse going to sleep on his feet.
And why?
Jack turned his back to his father. He pulled up his t-shirt. I see. Alexis did that to you? Turning around again, Jack said, It isn't that important to me, it's just a cut.
Did you see Duncan's accident?
Heard it, Jack said. I don't need to see accidents. Jack had the impression Fletch was still looking behind Jack, and Fletch's voice continued low and slow.
And I expect you saw Mrs. Radley hanging from the balcony.
Yes.
When Peppy saw the dangling corpse, he puked into the driveway's gutter.
Why hasn't someone taken her down?
Lieutenant Corso is awaiting police reinforcements.
Where is Lieutenant Corso now?
Went down to supervise the accident, I guess. Await reinforcements at the main gate.
Do these events have anything to do with each other?
The barbecue fork was on the floor of the balcony from which Mrs. Radley was hung.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
And you're sitting here alone in the nursery
to protect Mrs. Houston, Amy Radley McDowell, and seven little Radley heirs.
From?
Jack said the word as if by itself it made a statement. He sucked in a big breath and let it go. Doing so did not cool his face. Fletch waited. Jack said, Shauna Stoffel.
I thought you'd think so, too.
Fletch smiled. I noticed the blood on your sheets. Chester Radley mentioned to me Alexis had shared your bed the night before. One of you had bled. I was willing to believe Alexis was not a virgin. And somehow, because a girl scratched your back in lovemaking, I couldn't see you attacking her with a barbecue fork. Such smacks more of frustration, jealousy, than revenge.
Very softly, slowly, Fletch said, One might even speculate insanity.
Nor could I see you threatening a drugged older woman with a barbecue fork for any reason.
Of course.
Fletch smiled again. He was giving his son time to think.
One can never be sure.
Waiting for lab reports confirming Alexis's blood and Shauna's fingerprints on the barbecue fork necessarily would have made me just a tad nervous, so I thought I'd ask.
Having thought, Jack said, Shauna's gone crazy.
Fletch shrugged. Shauna loved. She was so convinced people here were trying to kill the man she loved, she asked you to insinuate yourself into this household and investigate. She convinced you that people here were trying to kill Chester Radley. You asked me to come here.
They were trying to kill him.
Be that as it may, they didn't. At least they didn't succeed. They may have driven him to his death, contributed to it. Shauna may have been literally correct. Driving him to his death, his self-destruction somehow may have been their true intention.
Jack's eyes were big.
Shauna killed Mrs. Radley.